Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. We are covering the aftermath of the shooting in Aurora, Colorado, at an early morning screening of the new Batman film there. Here is what we know, or more of what we know. At least 12 people are dead. Two died at the theater, two at the hospital. Among those 12, at least 38 others are wounded. Law enforcement sources identify the gunman as James Holmes. He's 24 years old, born December 13th, 1987, and James Holmes is in custody. The AP is reporting that Aurora police think that Holmes has booby-trapped his apartment with sophisticated explosives. Police say it could be hours or days before they are able to determine the extent of that booby-trapping. Here in New York City, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly said, quote, "As a precaution against copycats and to raise the comfort levels among movie patrons in the wake of the horrendous shooting in Colorado, the New York City Police Department is providing coverage at theaters where The Dark Knight Rises is playing in the five boroughs. Warner Brothers canceled the Paris premiere of The Dark Knight Rises. The Romney campaign announced they are pulling all political ads in Colorado until further notice. I have just returned from Colorado a week ago, and I can attest that almost every single ad, especially during TV newscasts, is a political ad. So that is not an insignificant step." Earlier this morning, President Obama spoke in Fort Myers, Florida, about the killing. It's about a 2.5-minute clip. Let's hear what the president had to say.
"Even as we learn how this happened and who's responsible, we may never understand what leads anybody to terrorize their fellow human beings like this. You know, such violence, such evil, is senseless. It's beyond reason. But while we will never know fully what causes somebody to take the life of another, we do know what makes life worth living. The people we lost in Aurora loved, and they were loved. They were mothers and fathers. They were husbands and wives, sisters and brothers, sons and daughters, friends and neighbors. They had hopes for the future, and they had dreams that were not yet fulfilled. And if there's anything to take away from this tragedy, it's the reminder that life is very fragile. Our time here is limited, and it is precious. And what matters at the end of the day is not the small things. It's not the trivial things which so often consume us and our daily lives. Ultimately, it's how we choose to treat one another and how we love one another. It's what we do on a daily basis to give our lives meaning and to give our lives purpose. That's what matters. You know, at the end of the day, what we'll remember will be those we loved and what we did for others. That's why we're here. I'm sure that many of you who are parents here had the same reaction that I did when I heard this news. My daughters go to the movies. What if Malia and Sasha had been at the theater, as so many of our kids do every day? Michelle and I will be fortunate enough to hug our girls a little tighter tonight, and I'm sure you will do the same with your children. But for those parents who may not be so lucky, we have to embrace them and let them know we will be there for them as a nation.
So there you heard in part one of the things President Obama said was, if there's anything to take away from this, it's the reminder that life is fragile. New York's mayor, Michael Bloomberg, has a different and more pointed message, and I'm sure that he would like to take away something about the issue of gun control. It's one of his animating issues. And on WOR radio, Michael Bloomberg spoke, and this again is about, I think, a 54-second clip. So let's listen to that.
Soothing words are nice. But maybe it's time that the two people who want to be president of the United States stand up and tell us what they're going to do about it. Because this is obviously a problem across the country. And everybody always says, isn't it tragic? And, you know, we look for, was the guy, as you said, maybe trying to recreate Batman. I mean, there's so many murders with guns every day. It's just got to stop. And instead of the two people, President Obama and Governor Romney, talking in broad things about they want to make the world a better place, okay, tell us how. And this is a real problem. No matter where you stand on the Second Amendment, no matter where you stand on guns, we have a right to hear from both of them concretely, not just in generalities, specifically. What are they going to do about guns?
And we should note that Mayor Bloomberg was speaking actually before President Obama spoke, but in some ways I think you heard there that he anticipated the tone of the president's comments. We're, of course, all watching for events and news, and we have questions about gun policy, public safety, and for our kids. I do invite your calls. We're at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. We please do not want to speculate about information that isn't confirmed. That's one of the dangers of live radio. So I ask that you adhere to some of our editorial policies and not get into that sort of thing. We have resources. It should be noted there are resources on our website, WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. Trusted Twitter accounts will be linked to. And right now, we're joined by Dr. Michael Stone. He's professor of clinical psychiatry at Columbia University and the author of The Anatomy of Evil. He was with this show in the wake of the Gabby Gifford shooting in Arizona. Dr. Stone, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
We obviously think of that shooting. That was the last recent huge rampage shooting. They actually happen much more frequently, and there have been other shootings since then. Perhaps we think of Columbine. Perhaps we think of Virginia Tech. Is that helpful to try to think about the other shootings that happened and see what's similar and what's different when an event like this breaks?
I think it is, yes. I went through last night. I was being interviewed about the Breivik case in Norway when I suddenly got the news about this disaster and mass murder in Aurora, Colorado. But I then look at my spreadsheet that I have on 208, well, it was 207 until I added James Holmes, mass murderers. And there are certain red threads that go through the list.
Are these American mass murderers, or since
no,
what date?
No, they're from around the world, but they're mostly American.
And dating back to when?
Turn of the about 100 years ago.
Okay.
First of all, they're 96.5% are male. Almost all of them are of a paranoid, in other words, mistrustful, suspicious, vengeful mindset. Many of them are disgruntled workers, like the famous Patrick Sherrill, who gave a bad name to the post office as going postal. Actually, there's very, very few people who work in the post office who behave like he did.
Right.
But men who were fired from other jobs will get disgruntled, like James Huberty, who then went into San Isidro McDonald's and killed 24 people there. So that's one recurring type that you see. The other ones, there are jealous people who get jilted by their wife or lover or whatever, and they commit a mass murder. But the idea of the being a paranoid male is that's the configuration you look for. Now, all I know about James Holmes is that he's 24. He dropped out of school. It'd be interesting to know why that was a month ago. Was he released because he got bad grades? Was there some other reason? If there was a rejection from his university, that might have played a role. He was not in the Army. He did not have a criminal record. So he's somebody that apparently snapped under the impact of something that we don't know yet.
In most of these cases, can we point to, I mean, going back 100 years, we might not have the evidence, but, you know, certainly we do recently. Can we point to examples where signs were missed and missed by people who shouldn't have missed them?
Sometimes, but not very often.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes there are very less disgruntled or fiercely angry people. Or, for instance, I'm thinking of this Marine Simpson, who killed his whole family when it was discovered that he had an incestuous relationship with his daughter and had a kid by her. And when the family exposed that, and he was a very, very tough guy and very angry guy, one might have suspected that he might snap when he was subjected to public humiliation. But the point is, before he does something, you can't throw a net around him and say, well, this guy I think is a bit of a risk, you know, for committing murder or mass murder, so we'll do what they used to do in Russia, protective detention. we don't do that. So now there's another small group in my 208 mass murderers. Only a couple dozen were psychotic, mm-hmm. Schizophrenics, or in one case, Lori Dan, the manic depressive, who tried to kill those children in Winnetka near Chicago, Illinois. So they're a riskier group because they've already shown signs of mental illness. But even that is not always a reliable predictor because the number of people who are mentally ill, seriously mentally ill, who commit murder or serious violent assaults is maybe only 5% of the mentally ill as opposed to 1% in the general population. So the other 95% never do any harm to anybody.
Do you have the sense or do statistics bear out that this is going up or does it just seem that way?
It seems that way. It probably is going up because I tried to find out as many as I could from the Internet and from other sources. And there's been more in my spreadsheet from the 70s and 80s and 90s than there were at the turn of the last century. I think, for instance, there weren't really so many people who had access to AK-47s and things of that sort way back in 1910, 1920. And of course, the last person, Jack Gilbert, for instance, who got into debt and wanted to kill his mother so he could inherit, he gave her a birthday present, which was really a bomb, on her airplane when she was flying somewhere in 1955. The whole plane blew up, including the mom. Of course, she was killed, but 43 other people were killed. That's a mass murder by a psychopath, not a mentally ill person, but just a cruel psychopath. But there aren't many incidents like that in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. So I think there is an increase, really.
Well, very quickly, Holmes, the suspect in this case, was taken alive. Is that common?
No, it isn't. Usually what happens is when there's a mass murder like that, especially in a public place, the SWAT team or the people, the police authorities come in, and they kill the suspect. The same has happened with Charles Whitman from the Texas Tower when he right. killed all those people back in '66, or George Hanard down in Luby in the cafeteria in Killeen, Texas. He killed several dozen people, but then he got killed by the authorities. So that it's not common for a mass murderer to survive. It's uncommon, actually.
Dr. Michael Stone, professor of clinical psychiatry at Columbia University, author of The Anatomy of Evil. So many questions. Thank you for answering some of them right now. We're going to be doing more of this as we continue. Thank you very much, Dr.
Stone.
Thank
you for having me.
And again, on our webpage, WNYC.org, The Brian Lehrer Show, we'll have resources, discussions. We'll continue on that in the Facebook page. Thanks very much for joining us today.